This meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will come to order. It's about 8:45. I can't read the clock. First item on our agenda, Senate File 2193, Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2193 is a bill prepared by the Minnesota PCA and the DNR. It includes proposals for permitting efficiencies and duty changes by the agencies. And in 2012, if you remember, the executive order and permitting efficiency law directed the Minnesota PCA and others to improve permitting timelines and goals. And so we've been working with the Minnesota Chamber and others like MCEA as we've proceeded through the committee process. And this is our fifth stop for this bill. So I don't know how you want to proceed, Mr. Chair. I could go section by section, or we could deal with the fiscal note. It's neutral and a slight savings.
Okay.
So,
Senator Scalzi, let's first thing we should do, I think, is probably adopt the division report. And, Senator Sony moves that the division report be adopted. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, so as you were saying, you've been to five. We have a division report. You've been to five committees.
Right. The last one, Mr. Chair, was Senator Tomasoni's Environment, Economic Development, and Agriculture Finance Division. And at that point, there was an amendment put on behalf of the Chamber and MCEA, and then there was another part on behalf of members of Senator Tomasoni's committee, and so that is also on that division report.
Okay. Is there any discussion,
Mr. Chair?
Senator Anderson.
Do we have a quorum?
A quorum is present. Thank you, Senator Anderson. So, Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment to offer when that's appropriate.
Anything else? Okay. Senator Peterson has an amendment. The
A6, sorry.
The A6 amendment.
A6.
We have it in our packet?
No.
Okay. We're going to pass that off.
And, Mr. Chair, while it's being passed out, as I said, we've worked through the process with the Minnesota Chamber, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and we've made changes in the past four committee stops at their request.
Well, if you've got agreement between the Environmental Partnership and the Chamber of Commerce, that should be pretty good, shouldn't it? So the A6 amendment that we all have in front of us, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. What the A6 amendment is, you'll see it's just three simple lines. What it's asking is that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency not issue a permit for a new disposal facility or the expansion of a disposal facility without having all the local approval completed first. So currently, if you can imagine a township board or a county board being approached by an applicant at a landfill, for example, walking into a meeting with a permit from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency before the county or the township board has had a chance to do the local approvals. What this amendment does, it just simply asks the PCA not to issue a permit for those facilities until all the local permitting is done first by the township and by the county. So, you know, if you would support this amendment, we'd be grateful. It's a vote for local control and a vote for a process that I think most Minnesotans view as very fair.
Senator Scalzi, you have comments?
Mr. Chair, I would like to I have with me here Kurt Kudelka, the Assistant Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and maybe he would need to explain the process somewhat to see how this fits or doesn't fit.
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you. For the record, my name is Kirk Kudelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The amendment here deals with landfill operations, and it would still allow environmental review to go first, which is a good consideration so that the local units of government and state units of government have what they need to make these decisions. The agency itself is neutral on this. There are some times where local units of government would like to be the first ones to move forward, and sometimes local unit governments would like the agency to move forward and do some of its work because they may have a smaller staffing and our expertise they may lean on for a local permit to decide what type of conditional use permits may need to be done. So this could have benefits and drawbacks both ways, and we'll stay neutral on the provision.
Senator Scalzi?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And at that indication, I would remain neutral as well. I would accept the amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
All right. Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pierce, why do you want this?
Essentially, you know,
Senator Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Thomasonian members. I've run into situations where not so much when a landfill is owned by a county, but when a landfill is owned by a private institution, for-profit organization, oftentimes they'll approach the PCA first because they view the process of getting that permit for expansion much easier than going through the local township board and local county board. As you can imagine, somebody that may live close to a landfill is more likely to be opposed to an expansion of a landfill and that type of thing. And so my view is that our residents are better served the more local decisions are made, particularly these very difficult ones relating to things like landfills. And I just think it's good government to have the township board and the county board, the people that live in that county, go first before the state agency would go first and issue a permit for expansion or for a new facility.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kudelka, does the local unit of government have to approve it after the PCA approves it also? Or is once PCA approves it, it's a done deal?
Is that directed to who, sir?
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it can go either way. Both will need to be done. If the agency does a permit, it would still need local approval for its regulations. So a state permit on its own does not guarantee the project moving forward. So a state or local, that order will probably be worked out between them, and it depends on the situation. Each situation is a little different.
So,
Senator Thompson.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Peterson, so what you want is to make sure that the local unit of government does the approval first before the PCA gets involved?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thomas, only that'd be correct. That's what this simple amendment does.
Okay. Senator Latz.
It sounds to me from the description from Mr. Kudelka like there might be circumstances when the local control or the local preference would be for the state agency to act first so they can conserve resources, use their own local resources more efficiently, and rely on the state's expertise. And there might be other circumstances where that's not the case. So if we really want to defer to local control, if that is the goal, then we ought to leave the flexibility in the statute as it is now and let each particular case develop as it needs to, depending on the circumstances. I'm not intimately familiar with this process, but maybe Mr. Kudelka can answer a question. These are independent analyses, if you will, or the state's review and the local review could be on separate independent tracks, or are they kind of codependent on each other?
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, unfortunately, there's no black and white issue on that. It depends on the situations. Multiple times, they are running parallel. We're talking back and forth to trade information. But the conditions on a local permit versus a state permit often could be very different. We, for instance, in the case of landfills here, we'll be looking at landfill regulations on a state level. If they need any industrial stormwater permits, local units of government will be looking at zoning issues. We'll be looking at setbacks, noise requirements, nuisance. Those are the type of things they're handling. There are different approvals, but we're all looking at the same piece. So we may sometimes be coordinating and getting the data that we both need for the answers.
So it sounds like there may be some overlap in the information or data that's helpful in making those decisions, but the criteria and the ultimate sort of statutory reference points for making those decisions sound more or less independent. So there isn't any necessity for linking the two or to mandating an order, one or the other, in terms of the substance. It's more a matter of do we wish to give an advantage to one side or the other, perhaps, in the process, which is what it sounds like the amendment is attempting to do, is to avoid a situation, to give an advantage, perhaps, to local opponents of a landfill application who might feel like a state approval before the local approval occurs would make it harder for them to succeed in convincing the local board to deny a permit request. And I'm not sure that I'm comfortable weighing in as a matter of state law on one side or the other of the policy debate by mandating a sequence here.
Senator Peterson, do you have a response?
Mr. Chair. The situation Mr. Kudelka described is exactly what happens. A landfill will get a permit, and then they'll go in, and the facility may not even be zoned properly, may not be in properly zoned, particularly because these facilities go oftentimes in agricultural areas and that type of thing. So, for example, they may be trying to convert agricultural land to an industrial use, and the company already has the permit from the PCA, and the township and the county board haven't even zoned the land properly for that facility or the expansion of that facility. And so, members, this is I can assure you I'm not trying to put anybody in a difficult situation. It's simply allows the township, the neighbors that are going to be by that facility, to go first before a state agency. Members, that's good government. That's local control. I believe that the more local those decisions are made, the better off our residents are. And so I'm not sure how else I can explain it other than I'm not trying to put anybody in a difficult situation. So.
Just one follow-up.
Senator Lurie. Yeah.
I just had a quick follow-up.
Okay.
Comment
Senator
on that,
Lance.
Which is, if the local agencies that would prefer to rely on the resources and expertise at the state agency do not have the option to do that, it's going to cause additional financial expenditures on the part of the local county board or township board to be able to do the due diligence necessary to make their decision. So it might actually cause increased expenses, read that as property tax increase or additional budget pressure, if those that don't have the in-house resources or the budget for it can't rely on the state's expertise in certain circumstances. That's why I think flexibility seems to me to be the better, most efficient use of government resources.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if, I hadn't heard of this before, but I was curious if the Minnesota Association of Townships, League of Cities, Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, Association of Counties, are they aware of this? Do they have a position? Did it get a hearing in any division? Did we have a policy debate? I mean, this is actually a pretty – I know of several instances where this would have changed the dynamic in the development of landfills in my region in ways that, some of my constituents would have really preferred and some would have really been upset about. And it would be a significant – change, and so I'm just wondering if it's been vetted very well in any of the policy committees, or the folks representing all these units of government have had a chance to weigh in as to whether this is a good.
Is there any representatives of local units of government, either individual or associations? Okay, no, there isn't any, Senator.
Well, Mr. Chair,
maybe
Senator Peterson could give us some insight into whether he ran it by them and what where this came from, what it is. I mean, I guess I'd like to know.
Senator Peterson, you want to comment on that?
Sure. Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Lurie, it's been the previous session when we've talked about this, I don't recall. Generally speaking, the local officials I serve and have exposure to are supportive. I think generally speaking, they want to be able to take responsibility for the zoning in their county, in their townships, and like I said, it does put the applicant in a position to circumvent that authority when they have a permit from a state agency before they have a permit from a county or from the township. And so I don't know what their current position is on it. I think my hope is that the fact that Mr. Kudelka and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and Senator Scalzi are neutral would give members of this committee some assurance that, that this is not an issue that I'm trying to put anybody in a difficult situation. So, and Mr. Chair, to ask for a roll call as well. So.
Roll call's been requested. Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I served on the Local Planning Commission for several years prior to coming to serve in the Minnesota Senate, and I can tell you that from a Planning Commissioner's perspective, we would appreciate this amendment because the last thing that we want when we're in a local unit of government is to be forced in some way by action that comes from the state. And so I recall conversations about, you know, watch what they're doing at the state. We don't want to in any way be directed in terms of our policies and procedures without weighing in. And so I think that particularly on issues that have impact in those local communities, letting the locals drive those decisions first and then bringing it to the larger regulatory body for blessing, so to speak, is the proper sequencing, and so I would support the amendment.
Senator Lax.
Senator Peterson could indicate if he shared with the local representatives from the local units of government here at the Capitol his intention to offer this policy amendment, substantial policy amendment, in the Finance Committee before this morning's hearing. Did they have any notice at all that this policy question was going to come before this committee so they could weigh in on it?
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, no, this is just came up as I was reviewing the agenda for the hearing this morning.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
I think
Lett.
It's a bad process for us to, aside from the question of whether the Finance Committee should be making a policy decision of this significance without getting the input from the relevant policy committee. I think it's bad policy, bad practice for us to pass something like this without at least getting the formal input from the representatives of one of the parties that would be most affected by this amendment. And we don't have the benefit of that now. We're just kind of chatting amongst ourselves.
Okay, other discussion on the Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question. If PCA approves a landfill site, doesn't the local government still have to approve it after the PCA cites or allows a permit for expansion or for a new site? Doesn't local government still have to? How does that work right now, I guess, is my question.
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the local units would still need to have any approvals that may be needed for their local regulations. I would anticipate most cases a landfill would have some local jurisdiction that they would need a permit for. So there is that would still have to occur under the current law.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, Senator Latz's comments about lawsuits are very accurate. So you can imagine an applicant who gets an approval from the PCA and then goes to the county board or township board first and then has their permit denied. It puts that applicant in a position to immediately file a lawsuit against the township and against the county. And, of course, their argument is, well, the PCA has already permitted my facility. How can a local government body then deny my permit? Because the state is viewed as a higher authority and again, puts them in a position to file a lawsuit immediately. So,
wait, Mr. Chairman.
Well, did that answer your question, Senator Goodwin?
Yes, thank you.
All right, Senator Pappas, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, this may sound innocuous, but, you know, I think it needs to be reviewed by the Environment Committee and by the State and Local Government Committee because I just don't know the ramifications. Sometimes we just don't think about unintended consequences. And without taking testimony from more extensive testimony from the PCA and from the local governments about what and to understand what the process is, I feel really uncomfortable about adopting it here in finance. I think it more appropriately discussed in a policy committee.
Senator Latz, and then we're going to take a little vote here.
Sure. Well, I wasn't going to say anything more except that I was told that I said something about lawsuits. But I'm not sure, I don't agree with Senator Peterson's analysis of the basis for a lawsuit. If they're independent criteria, as Mr. Kudelka identified, then a lawsuit claiming that one body made a decision isn't going to have any legal effect on another body. It would be an irresponsible lawsuit, I would think. So I don't know where the conclusion is that it gives grounds for a lawsuit. Also, I think we finally have some representatives. I'm sure they're very surprised to be dealing with this amendment here in the Finance Committee. Maybe we can get some guidance from our local
Mr. Chair.
Government authority.
Yeah. The only other thing I should add, this is just not a rural issue. This would include incinerators as well. So if you are in the city of Minneapolis and the incinerator wants to expand, it would include incinerators as well. So.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Scalzi.
And while we're waiting, it sort of puts them at a disadvantage. They're having to assume some responsibility for this language at this late date after having just walked in the room. But I just wanted to add, I spent six terms on a city council, and we, of course, never had a permit application for an incinerator or a landfill, but we worked with the MPCA every step along the way. There never was a question of who gets to do what and who goes first. I think that the state has fairly clearly administered and referred zoning decisions to local governments. And we have not, as you can see from the committees that this bill has gone through, we've gone through jobs, ag, and rural development, state and local government, judiciary, finance, and here. It has never come up, so I would just say if the representatives of state government and local government would like to take a little more time, I would certainly think that would be appropriate, or maybe it's another bill.
Mr. Johnson, do you have some comments to make?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would have to do a little more digging.
You probably ought to recognize or identify yourself.
Yes, thank you. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. And in looking at this quickly, I'm not aware of any concerns we would have with this. It does keep our authority to have our local permitting done. That's normally already a requirement for a permit, that to have a functioning permit, you do have to get the appropriate local permits in line also. I would have to look at this section of statute specifically to see if that is currently not the case in this. I'm not aware of that. But overall, it protects our authority for our permitting process to be completed before a facility opens, and that's what our interest would be. So.
Okay, other discussion, other comments? If not, on the A6 amendment, clerk, take the roll.
Saxog. Anderson.
Yes.
Bonoff.
Yes.
Champion. Cohen.
Yes.
Dibble.
No.
Fishbach.
Yes.
Goodwin.
Yes.
Ingebrigtsen.
Yes.
Latz.
No.
Limmer. Lori.
No.
Miller. Newman. Nino.
Yes.
Pappas.
No.
Peterson.
Yes.
Sieben.
Yes.
Stumpf.
Yes.
Tomasoni.
No.
Westrom. Uyghur.
Yes.
Champion. Limmer. Miller. Newman.
By a vote of 11 to 6, it is adopted. The A6 amendment. So, Senator Scalzi, is there any other discussion, any other amendments? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A5 amendment.
The A5 amendment will be distributed.
Mr.
Senator Ingebrigtsen. On the A5.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. And thank you, Senator Scalzi for, well, for the discussion this morning, not for allowing the amendment, but for having the short discussion that we did have. Members, I did have a very short discussion with the author before the meeting, and she was not aware that this was coming forward. And let me give you a little brief 45-minute to 50-minute narrative. I don't know. Maybe it's because somebody's sitting next to me. The narrative on the bill. But, members, I came across this situation in rural Minnesota with regards to resorts and campgrounds. And we all know the situation that resorts and campgrounds are in and have been in the state of Minnesota in the 70s. I think the numbers were, and these aren't numbers that I can hand out written to you, but I think I'm fairly accurate in saying there were 3,400 to 3,500 resorts in the state of Minnesota, and now we're looking at anywhere between 600 and 800 resort campgrounds that are remaining in the state of Minnesota. This is one of the camping heritages that folks talk about all the time wherever you go. If you do a lot of traveling, which I don't, but when I do, you always find people that, yeah, I remember Minnesota, or I camped in Minnesota with my grandpa or my grandma or whatever, and it's just always been there, and the rural members certainly know that, and I think the metro and suburb members as well, because they themselves have been out doing that over the years with their families. But this campground situation, one of my constituents came to me, it's a very large business called the Golden Eagle Campground in eastern Otter Tail County, fairly close to the Perham area. And what had happened there is they had expanded their campground facility there and again, I'm not totally accurate on the years, but in excess of 3 to 4 years previous to me making connection with them. And what they had done is they had gone through the process with the county land manager, the county land and resource manager. They had also been working with and had been inspected by the health department, state health official, and was just basically moving along as everyday business, not thinking anything more of it, just moved on and put in a pretty good system to address the amount of campgrounds that he had. All of a sudden this year, there was a squabble, apparently, between the owner and them wanting to sell to somebody, and they didn't get together on the price, and that precipitated a call to the MPCA. MPCA apparently inquired and started to look into the matter and found out that this campground had not gone through their procedures, which was to obtain a $9,000 permit fee, along with a program to handle the amount of people that the expansion addressed. So here's the owner. Here's the owner going with local government, going along with the land and resource director, and saying everything was fine. Actually, he came to the meeting that I had set up in Detroit Lakes with the MPCA. He was there saying he thought he had done everything, or the campground had done met all the requirements. Then the health department said they were inspecting it and everything was fine, state health department. And all of a sudden, this family is required now to come up with a $9,000 fee plus a plan by a certain time. So we did meet with the MPCA. Kirk Kadelka was part of that first meeting, and I've had subsequent meetings with the commissioner himself, along with a representative from the campground, as well as the owner of the campground. And frankly, I think there may still be some negotiations going on. But nevertheless, it seems like this is the rule. And that's exactly what it is. It's a rule, not statute. This is what the campground is going to have to do. Now, let me tell you that the campgrounds are different than year-round residents or year-round businesses. But the simple reason is that generally what you have is you have people coming and visiting and staying at the campground in five, not more than 6 months out of the year. So the discharge of the water into the system is obviously not going to be as much as if you were there year-round. I mean, it's just simply it's just a simple fact. But yet they're still being charged as though there is a 12-month discharge into the sewer system that they had built. So I guess just at face, it doesn't seem quite fair. It doesn't seem that we should be as heavy-handed, if you will. I mean, that's probably not the right term. Putting regulations on someone who's only participating in that function for a half a year, treat them the same as someone that does every year. So that's kind of an overview of what I've been dealing with here, and the PCA has been very stuck on their rule, quite frankly, and I wanted to meet with them beforehand because I thought we could come to some resolve, and as far as I know, that's not happened to this day. And what this basically says, like it does on the bottom of the page there in Section D, it refers to facilities of seasonal campgrounds and to be treating them differently than a year-round facility. And basically that's what the amendment is. And I'll stand for some questions. I'm sure I didn't catch everything here. Maybe Mr. Kudelka could comment on that if I'm not accurate in saying what I had said. But that's basically the amendment. And again, I caution all of us, especially in rural Minnesota that have these in our districts, that they're going by the wayside. And yes, in fairness, some of them are not finding anybody that wants to either purchase them or son or daughter doesn't want to stay there, or whatever the case may be, and the land turns into be quite valuable. And instead of a 6-month campground, what we end up is a plotted off lake association, where quite frankly the lake and the environment could probably be challenged even more. And they probably will be year round. I mean, I think you can show stories all over the state. That's what's happening, and we should be working with campgrounds and resorts to keep that heritage here in Minnesota. So that's basically what the amendment is, Mr. Chair.
Well, Senator Ingebrigtsen, that wasn't quite 40 minutes.
And there's a few other comments, too. I hope it's clear enough. It's not a certain standard
no.
question.
Mr. Kudelka, do you have a comment on that? Or?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we do. First off, I'd like to thank the senator. He has been keeping us in communication with the campground, and as he's explained the situation there, it is an unfortunate situation where the gentleman is trying to sell his property, and he is now, when he's trying to get out of the business, having some other things to do, and it may be being used by potential buyers in a nefarious way. We've been working with the gentleman, and we've been working on a schedule of compliance because there was an error made by the county, and we're not penalizing the campground owner for that. We want to work with them to protect public health. Having said that, though, we do oppose the amendment. I think it's important to talk about the why. The reason that this is put into place is public health and groundwater and drinking water. What happens here is when we can over it, it's easy to average something by numbers over the seasonal average and get a small number for the average daily use, but that's not how the environment and nature works. What we're concerned about are those peak flows, and that's what this is based off. Estimates, our rules are based off of. It's that 4th of July weekend when a campground is very full, and it starts getting to that 10,000 gallons per day. It's hitting those peaks consistently, and what it's discharging is sewage and nitrates, which are concerns for drinking water and the groundwater. When it gets into the groundwater, it doesn't average out like we can do it on paper. It moves as a slug. So as it moves beyond the campground property, it may be hitting its own wells. So now, unbeknownst to the campground, they're now having drinking water violations for nitrate and sewage and other items. Now it's moving beyond the property boundaries, and that's why we ask for monitoring on these larger systems to know if it's moving. The neighbor next door, unbeknownst, the homeowner who's filling their baby bottles with tap water now may have nitrates in it or sewers or others to make their formula. That's where our concern is. It's the public health. We will the numbers that we have devised, used is through the University of Minnesota, looking at their data on how many gallons per day a campsite is hooked up. It's also used EPA data that we've devised this with. We have pulled other campgrounds that passed this threshold. There are about 30 currently permitted in the larger systems for an SDS permit. There's 6 to 7 in the permitting process. So that's about a third of which we see for these large subsurface sewage treatment systems that people have already gone through this process to do the public protection and are playing on that same level playing field. We've pulled the data and we've looked, and because we do ask when these peaks are, and these other campgrounds that are permitted, they do hit those peaks. If you average it over 9 months, it is 3,000-4,000. But if you look at those high times when we're concerned about, it's over 10,000, it's over 12,000. And that's where it's having the violations that we're having concerns about.
So then, Mr. Gadelka, we got this slug of sewage working its way toward the baby bottles, right? Is that what? I mean, I don't know. That's what I.
Mr. Gadelka.
Mr. Chair, it would be they would have to get it from the tap water, but that's what the nitrate. Nitrates is a concern about blue baby syndrome, and that's why the Department of Health has a limit set for nitrates. And so, yes, I did maybe order that incorrectly, but there are someone, but it is unbeknownst to the homeowner. They don't realize that they're taking that water that now potentially has a violation, and that's where we're concerned about.
Okay.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Boy, I'll tell you, I thought I really had done well there with a good presentation. And all of a sudden now the state of Minnesota has got sludge heading towards baby bottles. I mean, it's nearly shameful, quite frankly. To your own, Mr. Chair and members, to their own admission, they're saying they've got many days that are not any worse close, the monitoring that's been going on, not any worse close to 10,000 gallons a day. And furthermore, the counties still have oversight of these areas, and they should continue to do that. They should continue to want to care about their counties and what goes on. But the $9,000 permit that the state of Minnesota didn't even know or didn't send out a bill, and all of a sudden, oh, gee whiz, yeah, that's right, you really should be paying this. So here's this guy sitting there. Sitting there after 3 years or 4 years of going with operation, being inspected by our own health department. And then all of a sudden we have a $9,000 permit. Oh, we forgot to send out that $9,000 bill. And it isn't just this particular person. If the folks that were here today that were at the MPCA meeting in Detroit Lakes, the regional office, you would have seen a whole lineup of resort people that were there. They were all concerned about the heavy-handedness that was going on here. So if you're convinced that discharging water not anywhere close to $10,000 a gallon 5 months out of the year is going to be the same as somebody dumping 10,000 gallons of water in daily, year-round, well, then I guess I'm really wasting my time. But if we want to stand in the way of these businesses that have made Minnesota and so been from Minnesota all their lives, and we're going to be running these people out of business, then I guess we shouldn't be paying attention to this. I'm just very frustrated with the system. When we give the counties the opportunity to do this, the county tells this person, along with many others now that are, by the way, probably wondering when their bill is going to be reviewed, and, oh, by the way, you, state of Minnesota, you owe us another $9,000 a permit fee. So, members, I think this is a vote for the Minnesota Heritage and the campgrounds to tell them that, listen, we care about them, we want to keep you here, and we're going to do what we can to let the local units of government handle this and continue on here.
Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think we've got two separate issues before us, and one of them being is the dollar amount for the permit, an appropriate dollar amount given our overall commitment to the health and well-being of this industry and how tough this industry has had it. And I, too, am familiar with resort owners that hang on by a thread. So I think you bring forward a valid concern, one in which is worth having significant time looking at. when I first saw this amendment, my reaction, while I didn't have the facts, kind of went to where Mr. Gadelka's comments were with regard to the potential for pollution in our drinking water and just the visual image of that. And so I looked at this amendment and I thought, oh, I can't support that because of the pollution side of things. So I don't think the answer to the concern around the fees is to stop regulating our, you know, sewage process. You know, to me that is not the direction. And so I don't have any comfort that without this permit process that we could still count on the regulatory process being in place. I'm not saying that that's true or not true, but it certainly leaves open those questions. And so I wouldn't support the amendment, but I would encourage you to look at our overall fee structure and have potentially legislation going forward next year with regard to the fee structures.
Ms. Garlitz, did you want to make a comment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Annalie Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I have not had a chance to, I had not seen this particular amendment, nor had I heard of the issue. I hadn't had a chance to discuss with the particular county the impact of this issue. One item is that I would like to run this past the Planning and Zoning Administrators Association. There's different levels of training that counties need to take, and perhaps Mr. Gadelka could help explain that a little bit better than I can on the fly here. But there's different levels of training that counties need to go through to do the permitting, and I'm not aware if counties are currently doing this or if it's just a handful of counties that are currently permitting. But right now, the Pollution Control Agency does do the permitting for those over 10,000 gallons a day. So there's some people that I would like to run this past to see what the impact might be for extra county workload on this. Thank you.
All right, other discussion?
Thank you.
We should wrap this up.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we will wrap it up. To the Senator's comments with regards to her concerns about pollution, you know, I don't think anybody in this room can possibly sit here and think that resorts are going to want to pollute the groundwater or the lakes that they're sitting on. I can't imagine that. That's almost like telling everybody that the farmer, and if you're willing to agree with that, I guess you're willing to agree that the farmer is okay with polluting the land in which they make a living on. I mean, it's the same thing. These guys and gals that own these campgrounds make a living on clean lakes. And I can't imagine why anybody would think that. And I'm not saying that, I'm not implying that you're saying that. But keep that in mind when you move forward here. They're not into ruining the environment in which they actually make money off of. I mean, that's what everybody goes out there for. So, Mr. Chair.
All right. On the Senator Eno.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gadelka, just for clarity's sake, what we're talking about here is a septic system, yes?
Mr. Gadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct.
I actually, believe it or not, used to design those. The design criteria for that, that's set by the state, but it the oversight is at the local level. You know, the county will come in, they will certify the design, make sure it meets the state codes, requirements, whatever you want to call them, come in and do the final inspection to make sure that it was all designed properly and installed properly, et cetera. Are you here telling us that the state design criteria are inadequate, that what the state has set up for design and installation for these systems doesn't account for peak flow dates?
Mr. Gadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's not what I'm saying. The system is built that way. What this amendment does is decide which criteria you fit into. The 10,000 gallons per day, no matter what type of facility you are, campground, seasonal, or others, have additional requirements because of the larger amount of discharge there. What this bill is doing is saying that what we are going to do is we're going to disregard that they're pumping at that higher peak level, and we're going to give them the systems that have less protection built into it instead of the proper category they should be in, where they have additional protections. For instance, monitoring to make sure that nothing's leaving the property area that would harm other sources of drinking water. That's something that's required on the larger systems, but not on the on the smaller systems.
Sir Nino.
And just a follow-up question then. So was the system designed and installed properly, or was it designed and installed improperly based on the size and usage estimates?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the specific case we're talking about, we're trying to get information. That's what we're having the conversations. It's hard to say where it is until we have more information.
After the fact. Other discussion, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
One more question. So to that point, Mr. Chair, Mr. Kudelka, so would the MPCA consider data that comes from monitoring those very systems, if those monitors were able to show that not even close to 10,000 gallons per day, not even close, were the data that you would collect, would that matter to your rulemaking?
Mr. Chair, Kudelka. Committee members, the rule states that it's peak values, and unfortunately, everyone is talking, when they present data to us, they're looking at what it is over 9 months, not the 7 days of peak. So they're averaging it, so they're making all their peaks disappear to fall underneath the limit. And so it is correct. Our rules allow for the estimate, which is done by the University of Minnesota and others that have done work on this for an estimated campground, or the peak values, not the average value overall, which is being done. And it's the higher of the two to make sure all businesses are treated exactly the same with the same amount of campgrounds.
So members, what he's saying is that the peak values are the only ones that are being concerned here, not the average lows. None of the average lows are being concerned, and that's exactly what's driving this 10,000 gallon. And that's really unfortunate if that's the rulemaking that's going on.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm really uncomfortable with this because, again, it should have gone to state and local government, and for us to not be able to have the chance to really have our staff look at it and have the public testify, I just don't think it's appropriate to do in the Finance Committee. So I would urge members to vote no.
Any other discussion on the A5? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Oh. The amendment does not stand. It is not approved. All right. On Senate File 2193, is there any other discussion? If not, we take the roll. Oh, Senator Tomasoni, I'm sorry.
Am I moving this? Yeah,
you moving it?
I'll move the bill, yeah.
All right. Senator Tomasoni moves Senate File 2193 as amended and be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Senate File 2193 is passed and sent to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Dietzick. Senator Tomasoni, you move the division report to Senate File 1899.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye. 2 weak little voices.
So Senate File 1899, Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1899 is a Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources recommendations for projects to be funded from the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund beginning July 1st, 2014. Mr. Chair, I have an amendment involving one of the projects. The amendment further clarifies, defines, and refines the scope of a project that is included in the Commission's recommendations. I don't know if you want to take up the amendment now or later.
The amendment is it oral or do we have it in our...
You should have it. I think it's the A5.
What is it, the
A3 amendment?
A3 amendment.
Yes. The amendment is on page 5, line 31. This is a project that will test the hypothesis that high mercury in fish from northern Minnesota rivers is caused by efficient uptake of the methylmercury throughout the aquatic food web. The results of this study will help the MPCA understand the drivers of the exceptionally high mercury levels and should help determine if there are actions that MPCA can take to further reduce mercury levels in the watershed area. The amendment just adds clarifying language. We had a long discussion on this project, and then after we, again, it was passed by the LCCMR, and then as we were getting ready for this, we decided we might need some further language clarifying that. So,
On the A3.
I'll move the A3 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni moves the A3 amendment discussion. If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The A3 amendment is approved. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The LCCMR funding priorities for 2014 included foundational natural resource data and information, environmental education, water resources, aquatic and terrestrial invasive species, air quality, climate change, and renewable energy, methods to protect, restore, and enhance land, water, and habitat, and land acquisition for habitat and restoration. Joining me this past year on LCCMR were Senator Tomasoni, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dames, and Senator Westrum. The LCCMR received 192 proposals from its request for proposal process, totaling approximately $111 million. We heard 94 presentations on a wide variety of issues and topics, from sewage to bugs to water to trails to Maxine the bald eagle. We are recommending 71 proposals. Collectively, they will receive approximately $29 million in funding from the trust fund. 47 of these projects are statewide projects totaling almost $19 million, and that's about 65% of our funding. These provide best management practices or research that can be used statewide or have statewide implications. About $2.6 million of these are proposed for several pollinator projects. The Department of Ag estimates that pollinators support an estimated $15 billion worth of agricultural production, including more than 130 fruits and vegetables. The pollinator projects include the DNR assessing the current status and distribution of wild bees in prairie grasslands. The Minnesota Zoo will be working to prevent extinction of the prairie butterfly. The U will look at enhancing and coordinating pollinator habitat and research the impact of exposure to systemic insecticides. The Landscape Arboretum will propose a pollinator education exhibit. And Pheasants Forever hopes to involve 800 youth and 200 adults in 40 communities across the state to improve the local landscape for pollinators. We are proposing to fund these projects because pollinators improve the vitality of nearly half of Minnesota's crop production. We are also proposing two moose studies addressing their decline and looking at the effects of temperature and forest quality on moose health. These studies expand on a current ongoing study. Several of the statewide projects are related to water. We are proposing about $4.5 million for water resource projects. These projects study or evaluate groundwater, aquifers, lakes, and rivers, the impacts of contaminants on water qualities, and research to improve and increase efficiencies in wastewater treatment. We are proposing about $2.3 million for aquatic invasive species and terrestrial invasive species. The U of M AIS Center has a proposal to modify operations from Lock and Dam Number 2, which is north of Hastings, to Number 8, north of Genoa, Wisconsin. The project hopes to impede invasive carp movement. The center has discovered that silver carp and bighead carp are extremely sensitive to noise. Their hearing is 10 to 100 times more acute than most fish, and studies in a tank, a sound similar to a boat motor literally annoys them, and they are estimating and guesstimating that's why they're jumping, to get away from that boat motor sound. The proposal will put speakers at Lock and Dam Number 8 to blast sound to keep the fish downstream and hopefully stop them from getting further up the Mississippi and then into the Minnesota River and the St. Croix River. The center has also determined that carp do not have strong swimming ability, so they are looking at testing the flow rate of the water in and out of the Lock and Dam to hopefully make the water go fast through the Lock and Dam, fast enough to stop the carp from swimming upstream, but also allow for safe navigation. There is also a project from the U of M Duluth using bioacoustics to detect and eliminate silver carp. It's similar to the technology that the U of M AIS Center is using, but it also could be mobile and useful in lakes. We are also proposing a regional AIS prevention pilot project in a Northwest Minnesota watershed area to help determine best management practices for local governments of unit, and this could involve all sorts of AIS from the the zebra mussels and quagga mussels to the spiny fish to all sorts of lovely little things. And they will work with and coordinate with the DNR and probably a Lizard Sam's project. The terrestrial invasive species, also known as TIS, is another big issue. We did not get a proposal for the TIS center at the U, but we are proposing some TIS projects because of their potential threat to forests and agriculture. The U and the Department of Ag will assess the risk posed to our estimated 191 million pine trees if the mountain pine beetle arrives from the west and prepare an early detection and rapid response plan. The brown marmorated stink bug is a threat to agriculture and horticulture, so the U and Ag will evaluate biological control options and implementation plans in Minnesota. And we will give additional money to the Department of Ag and the U to continue efforts on the emerald ash borer to save our 925 million ash trees. We are proposing about $4.2 million on foundation natural resource data and information projects, including the final phase of the Minnesota Breeding Bird Atlas and a project restoring old forest inventory data. These projects provide inventory and help with planning efforts. They provide critical information for land use, policy, and planning decisions. We are proposing about $3.7 million to protect, restore, and enhance land, water, and habitat, including several of the pollinator projects, a cattail management project, but not the one in Senator Dibble's district, a cattail and a cattail bioenergy project. We also have a watershed protection plan to provide a template for stewardship of unimpaired waters in southeast Minnesota. Almost $7 million goes towards land acquisition for habitat and recreation, including the Mesombie Trail in the range, a Minnesota River Water Trail and Landing in Morton area, scientific and natural resource acquisition and restoration, metro parks, and a strip of property along the St. Croix near Stillwater. $3.4 million for air quality, climate change, and renewable energy, including a project involving U of M Morris research on transitioning farms to local energy that will provide real-world usable options for developing clean energy strategies for Minnesota swine farms. And this can possibly be used in dairy farms, too. We have a beet processing and wastewater project involving the U of M Waseca that takes sugar beet runoff and manure to provide energy. We have a septic tank system research that uses microbial electrolysis to help improve efficiencies in large systems. We actually did have about, we had several 40 to 50-minute discussions on septic tank and sludge, because we also have a project that will develop innovative technologies to use wastewater, and they are looking at using scum, sludge, and algae to create biofuels. We have $3.7 million for environmental education, including youth-led sustainability initiatives in 40 greater Minnesota communities and projects to diversify and reach out to minority communities to get them involved in the outdoors and the natural resource community, and to provide environment education and internships. About $244,000, or less than 1%, goes towards administration, the website, and contract management. 18 of these projects are non-metro regional projects, including the Trail in the Range, the Water Trail and Landing in Morton, the Cattail Projects, the Youth-Led Sustainability Project, and then we have projects involving the U of M campus for Morris, Waseca, Crookston, and Duluth. We have six projects that have impact in areas in the primarily the greater 11 county metro areas. Those include the metro parks, the acquisition along the St. Croix, and then we have some upland, shoreline, prairie, and forest restoration in the metro area. In addition to the 71 proposals we are recommending, we are requesting time extension for 11 proposals originally funded in 2010, 2011, and 2013. These projects are not requesting or receiving additional funds, just additional time for completion, mostly because our funding season starts in July, which is in the middle of the planning season. The LCCMR is scheduled to sunset in 2016, and so are requesting to repeal that language since the appropriation and member appointments go beyond 2016. We have an opportunity to fund some interesting proposals that provide research and data to improve and protect our environment and quality of life. I'd like to thank Susan Thornton, Executive Director for the LCCMR, Mike Bankard, Michael McDonough, and Diana Griffiths, who are LCMR staff, for their great work reviewing and preparing all the materials and some tours that we took this summer, and they helped prepare for this meeting and this hearing. And thank you, members, for your time and consideration.
Questions on Senator Dietzick's recommendations? Senator Ingebrigts.
Senator, I'm just combing through this bill, and I can't find bubbly little things. Can you explain what those are? What part of the...
We toured
Senator Dietzick on the bubbly little things.
Yes, the bubbly little things. We toured at several places. We went all the way up to the headwaters of the Mississippi, and then I think we stopped at, I think it was outside Mille Lacs, and they had literally buckets full of all the different invasive species, from carp to, I call them, I mean, they were, they weren't the cattails, but they were algae.
Bubbly little things.
Yes.
Other questions? I'm going to, if not, I'm going to ask Mr. Bodern to kind of run us through. We've got a little procedure here we have to do to get it ready to go to the floor.
So, Mr. Chairman, the companion bill to Senate File 1899 is also in the Finance Committee's possession, and the committee needs to act on the House file. So what I would recommend is that you move to amend House File 1874 by deleting the contents of House File 1874 and inserting the contents of Senate File 1899 as amended.
On that motion as stated by Mr. Bodern.
So moved.
Moved by Senator Ingebrigtsen. Any questions? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Mr. Chairman.
As amended, Mr. Bodern.
And Mr. Chairman, then the remaining step is simply to act on the House file, but Senator Stumpf.
Yes, Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. getting back to those brown marmorated stink bugs.
Thank you.
Was there any discussion about the Asian lady beetle or lady bug?
We did not get a proposal on that, no.
It's also a stink bug, and it bites as well. Looks just like a lady bug. So, and both of them have been introduced from the Eastern or Asia. I believe the stink bug came from China, and I think also the Asian ladybug did too. And both of them, or the Asian ladybug was actually, I believe, brought here for an agricultural solution to some kind of a aphid, soybean aphid. So we have to be careful. Now it's a pest. And anybody that lives close to a soybean field or even, you know, not that close, has these bugs in their house constantly. So if you have any extra funds on that study, you know, include that bug as well.
Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that's part of the reason that this TIS, Terrestrial Invasive Species Center, is coming up, because there are four or five pages of different plants and animals that are terrestrial invasive species that are causing a problem. And like you mentioned, the stink bug, I guess it stinks. I've been told it stinks if you step on it, but it's eating a lot of the agriculture and horticultural plants, and so it is a huge economic problem here. And we didn't have a discussion on the Asian beetle that looks like the lady beetle, but my understanding is that was brought in as a biocontrol down south, and then it spread and is now causing problems. And that's something that we would hope that the TIS Center would help research, because again, it does have an impact on our economy here. And then some of the studies, I mentioned the mountain pine beetle study, they are, because they don't want, and because of problems that they've, you know, had when they've introduced what they would hope would be biocontrols to take out one group of invasives, they are going to use that, is going to be in a controlled lab so that it doesn't cause further problems. So they are testing a lot of these to make sure that they don't have unintended consequences.
Just an aside, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It actually does, the ladybug also causes a lot of problems, especially with the horticultural crops. And the result is that you end up, the producers have to end up using, you know, insecticides when we really don't want to use insecticides. So if you can find a solution, that would be great.
Senator Bonif.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, I met with the folks who were working on the Terrestrial Invasive Species Center, and I asked about the Asian ladybug as well, because it's not just affecting those who live near soybean crops. It's, you know, just rampant in my community, and every home is filled with them. And so they did mention to me that they were looking at that, but I, too, would echo those concerns and ask that we figure out how to put a stop to that.
Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, there might be a friendly amendment that could just clarify that type of activity for the floor, and I just echo some of the same concerns because they are quite a pest.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Senator Thomasoni.
Chairman, Senator Dietzick, on the solar photovoltaic installation at the residential environmental learning centers, is there a Minnesota-made requirement on this?
Senator Dietz.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
On the solar photovoltaic, I don't know if there's a Minnesota-made requirement on it.
We're checking, but I don't think so.
I think we should put one on then.
Yeah.
Mr. Bodron, can you give me some language for getting a Minnesota-made?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Thomasoni, are you referring to the appropriation on page 20?
23.
Sorry.
On page 20, maybe I need it in two places.
Mr. Bodron.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomasoni, did you want to require that or give some kind of preference?
We'll require it.
Okay. Well, then, I think what I can do for you at the moment is to suggest on page 23, line 30, after arrays, insert made in Minnesota.
Okay. We'll offer that amendment then.
I'll take that as a friendly amendment, and we might have another one here requiring at least a U.S. made product.
On the motion by Senator Thomasoni for made in Minnesota being ejected as an amendment, the friendly amendment by the chair, Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair and Senator Thomasoni, I agree with the direction you're going. One question I would just ask, and I plan to support this, and we can maybe talk about it, but is there a scenario where maybe it drives up the cost 20, 30, 40%? Wondering if maybe the word competitive, so long as there's a competitive bid, and I assume there would be, but there could be a scenario where one or two providers know they've got the business, and so that would be my only concern I raise. I agree with your spirit, would plan to support it, but offer this as maybe something we could talk about between now and the floor.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Dietzick.
We looked up in the work plan. They have already did a competitive bid and have selected a Minnesota company provide them.
Okay.
So it's
which one?
Is it north of number two?
Yeah, north of number two.
All right. So.
No, it's Alexandria. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's a good one.
All right. So, Senator Thomasoni, you want to hang with your amendment? All right. On the Thomasoni amendment, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Passes. And is part of the House File 1874 is amended. Any other comments? If not, somebody want to make a motion?
Yeah, move the bill.
Senator Thomasoni moves that House File 1874, as amended, be passed and sent to the floor. Any other discussion?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I guess we have a few more minutes to try to take the next bill. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, if no other discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Bill passes.
Thank you.
You're not doing any good on my amendment. Get out of there. I had a Minnesota-made sewer pump or something.
There's a few.
Which one do we have in mind?
I got to get this figured out. After 8 years, I haven't figured it out yet.
It turns up the late.
Oh, I know. I wanted two.
Okay, Senator Herr. Senate File 2186. Okay, Senator Thomasoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Hurt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to begin this sooner than I planned. But thank you very much. This is a non-controversial bill, I expect. Senate File 2186 is a 2014 housekeeping bill or on-session bill. The provision in this bill have been discussed and composed by representatives of the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council and received consensus from DEED. The representative of the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council include members from AFL-CIO, the Chamber of Commerce, Legal Aid, and other organizations, and also a member of the legislature, both the House and the Senate, and bipartisan. This bill has two parts. Article 1 state the policy, and Article 2 make change to simplify Chapter 268, the unemployment insurance statute, to make program easier to understand for businesses and individuals. And this bill was heard in the Job and Ed Committee and is referred here mainly for the provision on lowering the interest rate on unemployment insurance from 18% to 12%. So I have with me here Director of Unemployment Insurance Program, Ray Calorari, and it will take me some time, I know it's, and Greg Gustafson, Director of Appeal and Legal Aid, to explain the lower interest rate further, if anybody have any questions.
This is a good deal. You should
have. Certainly, if you'd like to offer some testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Rick Caligiuri, and I'm the Director of Unemployment Insurance at DEED. A major issue in this bill relative to being before this committee is a cut in the interest rates that we charge to individuals who are overpaid due to fraud and drawing on unemployment insurance that they were not eligible for, and also the interest that we charge to employers for not reporting. And the interest rate was set at 18% in the early 80s when interest rates were extremely high. Prior to that, the interest rate was 12% for about 40 years. 12% is kind of an average rate as you look at the different states that they apply to fraud overpayments. You have to have a rate that's significant enough to incent people to pay you back. And but 18%, we've in discussion with the advisory council, we felt was excessively high, and we're bringing it back to the level that it was for many, many years. This has no impact on the general fund, and it only impacts a special contingency account and also our unemployment insurance trust fund, which is a federal account.
Questions for Mr. Caligiuri? Okay, thank you.
Move the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Tomassoni moves that Senate File 2186 be recommended to pass. Is there discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Hurt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Members, we have three other bills on the agenda, and I told Senator Bach that we wouldn't carry past the start of session. I think the three bills have, if not questions, I think I see all those amendments in front of Mr. Bowder. And so it suggests we're going to have a few minutes with those bills. We have two other bills that are simpler bills, a bill of Senator Sieben, a bill of Senator Wieger. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to meet Monday morning. We'll start at 8:30. What this committee hasn't done in a number of years, and I'm not sure if we've done this under my chairmanship, I just want to make sure everybody knows what I'm doing for you people, is we're not going is we're not going to meet all day Saturday.
Yay.
So,
Mr. Chair, that was a cheap yay for you.
Is there, I believe we have session tomorrow. Is there any way we could get through some of these bills tomorrow?
I'll see if we can. I'm not certain because of the timing of session tomorrow. So I'll talk to Senator Bach first thing. We'll send that out. But we have Senator Reiner, Senator Pappas has a bill on the agenda, Senator Schmidt. We'll take those bills up certainly Monday. And members, you know, should be aware, as we get toward the end of session, you know, the scheduling always gets a little bit trickier.
Chair?
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, do you know, are we going in to session at noon on Monday?
I don't know.
Okay.
So we'll...
Because
we'll,
9 o'clock, Mr. Chair, would...
Yeah, if we're going into session later, you know, we'll try to schedule it a little bit later. But we'll check first thing when we get up to the floor and get an email out to everybody right away. But we obviously, with the session in a minute, we're not going to, Senator Reiner, apologize, but we're not going to get to these other bills. But we will hear them Monday morning for sure. If I could convince people, you know, conference committees will be going through the weekend. But I'd be happy if I could convince people to come Saturday for a couple hours. But this legislature, we don't meet through the night anymore in conference committees. We don't have Saturday meetings all day. It's just sad.
So sad. For some, not for all.
We have an 8:30 in the morning bonding committee Monday morning. I think you're on that committee, Mr. Chair.
It's just a train ride. Mr. Chair, that's just a train ride. So,
a very important train ride.
That's going to wreck. Yeah, it'll probably go right by my office.
Oh, it's right.
Office.
Yeah.
So, what, Sarah Stumpf, is that?
I think it goes from 8 to 10, doesn't it?
Mr. Chair, you're on the bonding committee.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, there's. Significant.
No, we're not going to meet Sunday. Senator Dibble?
Significant transportation committee overlap, and they're part of that.
Yep.
Ride. We could convene on the train.
That's right, the green line.
Yeah, green line tour.
Well, okay, we'll figure this out. Maybe we'll see what's going on tomorrow, and as Senator Miller asked, and we'll try to come up with something as convenient as possible, but these authors would like to have the bills heard, and... you know, this happens at the end of the session, but I'll try to avoid Saturday. So
we won't have quorum, so that's all right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I saw Senator Miriam about 10 days ago, and we were talking about this. He'd have these meetings. We'd start at like 8:30 Saturday morning. We'd finish about 6 Saturday afternoon.